Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We got a fun show today. Super Bowl champ Stephon Gilmore is here in about an hour. Probably bring up the Super Bowl. I don't know, maybe other topics. Magic Johnson is turning his focus to the offseason now. But we are going to start with the decision. Not that one, different decision. After much anticipation, some deliberation, some pros and cons, Kyler Murray has chosen football. The Heisman-winning quarterback was drafted to play baseball, but he has decided to test the NFL waters. He said in a statement yesterday, "I am firmly committing my life and time to becoming an NFL quarterback." There are still questions about his diminutive stature, but he's projected by most draft experts to be a first-round pick. All right, CC, we'll start with you. Your reaction to hearing that Kyler Murray's heading to the NFL or wants to?
It's good news for the NFL, because we're still getting the best and the brightest of all talent that wants to try to play football. So I think when you're able to get a player that can be a Major League Baseball player, like, it's real. We've never had the combination of someone being drafted Major League Baseball in the first round and the NFL in the first round. So I think him and his team, they're going about it the right way, because now is the time before the combine is ever, because we have so many staff changes, but never in the history of the NFL have we had as many offensive-minded coaches. We got 8 new coaches. So now would be the time for someone like Kyler Murray, with his style, coming off the excellent Heisman Trophy season there at Oklahoma, to be able to make that jump. And there's real pressure for him to be able to play baseball, where he's already gotten over $1 million. He's got to write a check for $1 million to be able to make this process so that he doesn't go to the A's. So I like the decision. I think now is the time, not only based on the coaching staffs, not only being the NFL is an offensive-dominated league, but because of the rule changes, that his size, especially if he gets out of the pocket, they're not going to hurt him as much. Now, we know that the rules are for the quarterbacks in the pocket, but you still can't brutalize a quarterback outside the pocket in the NFL. So I think his throwing motion is very good. I think he's a better quarterback than the quarterback we saw in Lamar Jackson. We saw Lamar Jackson have success in Baltimore as the last pick in the first round. I can understand why Kyler would make this decision, and I believe that he does have a bright future in the NFL.
I hope I'm wrong about this, but I think Kyler Murray is going to end up playing baseball at some point, because I do not think he is a starting quarterback in this league, only because he would be the first. He would be the first guy at his size to be successful as a starter in this league. They compare him, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson. So I looked up the combine numbers. Drew Brees, 6 feet, 213, with 10.25-inch hands. Russell Wilson, 5'11", 204, with 10.25-inch hands. Baker had the smallest hands, 9.25-inch, but he's 6'1", 215. Kyler Murray is going to measure in under 5'10", and he's 195 pounds listed. So he's at least 10 pounds and more than an inch shorter than the shortest guy in Russell Wilson, who had abnormally large hands for a guy of his size. At no point when I watched the University of Oklahoma this year did I ever think I was watching a future pro quarterback. I thought I was watching a spectacular college quarterback. And I think NFL teams are going to trick themselves to a degree. And I wonder if Kyler Murray was the exact same player, but in last year's draft class, where we had a multitude of quarterbacks that were projected first-round picks, would he be a guy that we would be discussing the way we are today? I saw the commentary yesterday once this came out was a Dolphins writer was saying the Dolphins could want him at 13. And the general feeling was, oh, he's not going to be there at 13. So it's not only that he's going to be a first-round pick, but that he's supposed to be a top 10 pick. And I wouldn't be surprised if the conversation moves to a top 5 pick.
So you just believe just because of his height, because I don't hear you say anything of just his height.
Absolutely. I think there is a minimum threshold. I think it's like,
I would rather a guy be short than a guy who can't throw. And we got a couple guys who are not accurate throwers of the football. And Lamar Jackson, I don't know what you call what he's doing right now.
And
so for me, I would much rather have a guy who can throw and is short to attempt to be the first guy to do that than these guys who Josh Allen. He's got a big-time arm. He's the prototype size and everything. But he's also the prototype to be the next Blaine Gabbert or Blake Bortles,
but too. If you remember on Josh Allen, I was saying I wouldn't spend a first-round pick on him either. Like, I try to be very – now, for very different reasons, because he checked all the height measurables boxes, but he never completed 60% of his passes in high school. So I didn't think he was going to get accurate come the NFL. I have a hard time believing in guys doing something that no one has ever done. Now, there's always someone that does something that no one's ever done, but there isn't – we'd all agree a 5'5" guy can't do it. So what is the minimum? What is the minimum allowable height?
Well, for one, I think it's different than just the height. When you see that he walked in the same footsteps that Baker Mayfield, and you see all these college coaches changes, you see Cliff Kingsbury get fired in college, Texas Tech get the offense coordinator job at USC, and then get the head coaching job for the Arizona Cardinals. So the NFL is changing, and our critique of college quarterbacks, it should change with the rules and with this influx of young offensive minds coming into pro football.
So let me throw another wrinkle in there. This idea of auto-correction, right, of these teams that look back last year, because last year at this time, no one had Baker going number one. Very few people did. Now you look back and you're like, oh, well, maybe there's things we didn't see. Where is your feeling on teams now doing this and this auto-correct, like, oh, maybe we sort of missed on Baker Mayfield, but we should stick here because there's something we might hit on.
I think there's an element of that, and I think C's point of that we are seeing the college game have more of an influence on the pro game than ever before has an enormous element of this. Kyler Murray would not have had a decision to make 15 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, because people wouldn't have been talking about him as a first-round pick. And I understand the Baker comparison, not only because of he skyrocketed up draft boards, but
same
Heisman Trophy winner
too, yeah,
from Oklahoma. The difference in height between Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray is the same difference in height between Baker Mayfield and Tom Brady. Like, Baker is short.
What's the difference between Kyler and Michael Vick?
What?
Vic was
two, I think we're going to find out 2.5 inches. He hasn't measured out at the combine yet. University of Oklahoma came out and said he's 5'9 and 7/8 of an inch. That's what they put out that he measured with them.
Okay, Vic was 6 feet.
So 2.5 inches.
Like, and Michael Vick threw sidearm and was not an accurate thrower of the football, and he was the first pick in the draft. So I think that Kyler, even 15 years ago, there would have been a team to give him a chance. When you put up the type of numbers that he did, unless you're just going to avoid all those numbers, those numbers, sheer throwing numbers, his passing efficiency at Oklahoma, you can't ignore that. That, to me, I'm going on the skill. And I do believe someone is eventually going to be able to do this since they've changed the rules. I didn't think someone would do it when they had the old rules because it was about being big, physical, and if you couldn't see in the pocket. Now the rules, you can't land on the quarterback. There's so many things you can't do to the quarterback, and his speed and playmaking ability, I believe, is very, very special. I believe he'll be a top 10 pick, and I believe he'll be a starting quarterback next season in the NFL.
What is there a number you'd be looking for his hand size, C? Because I know you focus on that a
lot. No, because I've seen some big guys with small hands that can throw the ball. I've seen some big guys with big hands that can throw the ball. It's one of the attributes with pass catching and throwing the ball. Yes. Do we have people who throw the ball well and don't have big hands? Of course we do. This kid is special. You can see it, how he delivers the ball, his ball handling, his play fakes. He's a playmaker and a leader. No one expected him to do what he did last season. So I'm going to be one of the people going to expect that he's going to make this jump and be that starting quarterback in the NFL.
All right, let's take a break there. Talk some basketball.
Just mark this day because he's going to look at me. I don't know how many years.
Well, I hope I do. I hope I'm wrong.
My guy.
I hope I'm wrong.
I hate to say it.
It would thrill me to say I was wrong about Kyler Murray.
You never thrilled when you say it.
On this one, I would be happy
to
be wrong.
Your face is down.
Talk some Celtics on the other side. Is it time to point the finger at Brad Stevens? That's next on First Things First, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this. Coming up at 7:30, Super Bowl champion Stephon Gilmore joins the show. Should be a fun time. Good conversation. All right, we'll get to LeBron in just a second. But first, check it out. Paul George, another monster night. Big dunk, 2 of his 47 last night.
He was spectacular last night. 47, 12, and 10. He was just great.
He is playing at a level consistently. Him, Greek Freak, and Harden, those are the top three.
Mavs, Rockets, Luka Doncic showing off the handles, and then the step back.
Oh, look at that. Between the legs, same hand, then the step back fall.
He said it a couple days ago, Nick. Scoring in the NBA, it's a lot easier to score it in the European League.
I know. I want to talk about that. I thought it was a very interesting comment by him. And him coming into the league this year in this environment has led to that. I thought it was a really interesting comment by
Pistons,
him.
Pistons, Wizards, Bobby Portis going up for the dunk, and Thon Maker sends him packing.
Man, I really liked this kid when the Bucks drafted him. Thon, that is. I thought his length and defensive presence would be really good for him. They never could quite unlock how to use him there. I'm rooting for him in Detroit. He's got a lot of upside to me. Obviously, he's still very, very raw.
Yeah, very talented still. There was a problem with his birth certificate in high school. How old is the guy? Thought he was 17, found out he might have been 21.
Oh. Knicks, Cavs, ratings bonanza here. Mario Hezonja going up for the big dunk.
This is how this guy got drafted. He was a trash-talking dunker in Europe. When he got drafted in the top 10 by the Magic, he was talking about how he's going to be an all-star his first year. That obviously has not worked out, but he can leap now.
Man, I didn't know he had this in him. I thought he was just a jump shooter.
Oh, no. His highlight reel from Europe was just this, just him booming on guys that didn't look like pro basketball players. He has not been able to translate to the NBA, but that leaping ability didn't go anywhere.
Oh, he's not talking like Luka. It's easier to score here.
I was just going
to
say, I wonder why.
It has not been
easier
to for him.
Score here. Moving on to the Boston Celtics now. They've suffered back-to-back terrible losses, one to the Lakers, one to the Clippers. Despite high expectations coming into the year, they sit in fifth place now in the Eastern Conference. Head coach Brad Stevens was asked about his team chemistry moving forward. Take a listen.
Every group has to work its way into the best chemistry it can be. And, you know, obviously we've got a ways to go, but, you know, the really great teams get there. And, you know, we'll find out. Our story will be told at the end if we made it or not, right? This group likes each other. It's a well-intentioned group. I think that obviously we've talked about it. All of the different challenges of roles and everything else have been something that has made it difficult at times, but those have actually been much better of late. I think when you lose, it's not fun. You know, like, and also it's right after the game, right? So like that's part of it. When you lose big leads, when you know you're getting booed, rightfully so, off the court, like it's not like, hey man, that was awesome. You know, like that sucks. It's not fun. So whatever, like play well.
So, Nick, Brad Stevens had a bit of a different way of describing what's happening with the team in the locker room and on the court than Marcus Morris did the other day when he talked about how it seems like it's very individualized, every man for himself. He seems to think they all like each other and they're gelling and this might just all come together. How much of what's happening with the Celtics now, their struggles, should be pinned on the head coach?
Well, first of all, I think he's wrong when he says they all like each other. They clearly do not all like each other at this moment.
You say he's wrong. I prefer to say he's not telling the truth.
Okay, sure. Whatever it is, it's what Marcus Morris said was far more accurate right after a game.
What did Jaylen Brown say?
What did Jaylen
Brown, when he was talking about Kyrie.
Oh, about the guys not being on the same page, the young players kind of pushing
against the leadership.
And
don't say anything publicly.
Right, absolutely right. The Kyrie talking about the young players publicly. So how much, to answer your question directly, falls on Brad Stevens? A lot has to. You know this about me, Jenna. I do my very best every day to be consistent. And if I have a theory or if I have a philosophy, whether it works for a case I want to make or against it, I got to be consistent with
that.
And ever since Brad Stevens has been a coach in the NBA, I've been talking about how good of a coach he is. Last year,
great. No, no, you passed the good stage.
100%.
He was on the fast track.
Last year, I said he was the best coach in the league, not named Greg Popovich. And what we are seeing now is that with a different type of team than he's ever coached before and with higher expectations than he's ever had at any point in his coaching career, he is not getting the same results that he's gotten in the past. You mentioned it, Butler. He had a lot of guys like the team last year, guys where you didn't have overwhelming talent. You really had to coach them up.
Two and three-star recruits.
There's another thing that last year's Butler team had in common with – I'm sorry, last year's Celtics team had in common with his Butler teams. Young guys. Young guys who are thirsty to learn, who are going to look to you and say, how can you make me better? This year, right now, is the first time in his career he still had the young guys, but he's also had a group of established veterans with all-star credentials. Horford's been an all-star. Kyrie's been an all-star. Gordon Hayward's been an all-star. And having to mesh those. He never had that at Butler. I understand Gordon Hayward became a star at the tail end of his career, but he's still a college kid. So all of that to go along with the fact that one thing that helped him last year, I believe, C, is, and you know this crosses any sport, is if a coach says, do this and it'll work, and then you go out and do it, and you get an easy bucket, that out-of-bounds play stuff he was so good at last season, it engenders trust, it engenders belief. This year he said to him, we're going to put Gordon Hayward in the starting lineup. It'll work. And when it doesn't, the opposite happens. It engenders distrust. It engenders, wait, is this guy pointing us in the right direction? So he can't – I still think he's a very good coach. Still think he's one of the best coaches in basketball. But that doesn't mean he's having a good season. Just like a great player can have a bad season, a great coach can. And I think you have to call this thus far a bad season for Brad Stevens.
It definitely is a bad season for Brad Stevens. I was never to the – because I just believe in the process. I don't believe I have to say things like Brad Stevens is a great coach without him winning anything. Because if you look at the NBA, if you look at Brad Stevens, what are his accomplishments? Nothing. All right? They went on a good run last season. But what has he accomplished in the NBA? Nothing at all. But he's got his work cut out for him this year because I believe that even though Kyrie's learning how to be a leader with Morris and Al Horford, they got good leadership. So they got good players at the top that know their role, can come to work, guys that have been great teammates in other organizations, guys that have won other places. But now these young players, because part of your job as a coach is to continue to develop young players. So, yeah, we liked him. Out of timeouts, dead ball stuff, he was great. Developing as young player, we could see them developing. But they still have to develop. So last year, just because you went to Game 7 against LeBron thinking you had it figured out, no, you didn't have it figured out. And I believe that just like players, there's tape out there on Brad Stevens. Teams are used to their sets a lot more now. They're not getting the wide open looks out of dead ball and out of timeout situations like they used to. So there's an adjustment that young coaches have to make that the league is making to them. And that's what I see happening with Boston. These expectations, they don't have it figured out as an organization. They're still trying out. Kyrie, this is not his home. This is not his team. They've struggled. Him saying that the players are happy and like each other, that's not true. Because we've had a couple of players already say after games that they weren't happy and the situation there was not a good one. So that's what they told us. Just imagine all the other stuff that's going on that they're not telling us. So, yes, he should be blamed for their slow start, even though Gordon Hayward, it's a health issue. Kyrie started the season. He wasn't healthy. So, yes, there's some built-in excuses in there, but we were giving him all the credit. So now the team's not doing well. It's time for him to get that blame.
It's not that much of a different team last year than he has this year. Yeah, he doesn't have, obviously, Gordon Hayward, but he had Kyrie.
Kyrie for 60-some games.
Sure, he had Al Horford. I mean, he had Jalen. He had, he had Tatum. Like, he had the same team. So is it that other teams are starting to figure out their sets?
I think it's part of that. I also think, and you guys know that I've been saying this for the better part of a year, I think what happened last year was overrated. I think people wildly overreacted to the end of the season. Without Kyrie Irving, at the end of the regular season, they went 9-7. They didn't take off without Kyrie Irving. They held ground barely. And then in the first round, they won a 7-game series against a terribly coached Milwaukee team that, without an overtime win in game one, they go home. The next round, yes, they beat Philly in 5, in 3 of those games coming down to the final possession. And then they lose to Cleveland. They were 1-6 on the road in the postseason last year. They were 20-15 overall without Kyrie last year, which is good, but it's not like, oh my God, they were just on another planet. And Gordon Hayward has not been a positive addition.
Well, I think I have to disagree with you because they did some things that were concrete. They were not fool's gold. They had both of their young players in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown develop their games. Jason Tatum, big time scoring. Man, moving without the ball. One time, Nick, you said, man, this guy's going to be a max deal. Because of what? Because what we saw in the playoffs. Not because of the 9-7 record. Jaylen Brown, he could do more than just be a good defender.
Yep.
learned how to dribble. Man, shot the three-pointer. Him and Tatum both shot the three-pointer and shot it at a high level. These were all things that are called player development. Those were things that we thought were bricks and mortar. That's why we thought they had so many trade pieces, because, man, Kyrie's coming back healthy. Gordon Hayward's going to be healthy. And these guys continue to develop. So what these young guys did, it was real. And I just believe even in a future trade, they will get credit for that on a big stage. So I thought what they did, especially as developing their young players, was pretty special.
I thought it was absolutely impressive. But when it came to projecting for this season, people I just think were not doing the math right. We talked about how, like, Terry Rozier is playing almost as well as Kyrie Irving. Well, then how much better do you if Terry Rozier was doing an 80% job of Kyrie Irving, then bringing in Kyrie Irving only makes you 20% better, right? Like, if Jason Tatum was playing like an all-star in the playoffs, and now you bring in Gordon Hayward and you cut his minutes or Jaylen Brown's minutes, then how much better do you get? Like, it was, you had guys that were playing really well,
right,
that we were assuming, we were acting as if the game was they're gonna have more minutes to go around than they did.
No, what we didn't expect, though, we didn't expect them to drop off the face as far as a defensive team. All right, because that's one thing they could always have. Even when they struggled offensively, late in games without Kyrie, their defense was part of the reason why we love the Celtics. And they're not the same team defensively. And that's just based on attitude, energy, and I got this guy's back. Because that's all defense is about.
All year long, they were the number one defense in basketball last year. This year, they've hovered between fifth to eighth all year. So they're still a good defense,
right,
but not the dominant defense they were.
And then also in the playoffs, the discrepancy between home and away. It was
enormous.
Just enormous. All right, take a break. Coming up, who should the Lakers be targeting this offseason? Magic Johnson has an idea. Wait till you hear it next on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. Tune in tonight. The finale of the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show Stakes Are High's group winners compete for the coveted distinction Best in Show. It all starts tonight at 7 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. Colts offensive guard Quentin Nelson had an outstanding rookie season. He was named first team All-Pro and a Pro Bowler, but he also could play some hoops. During his senior year in high school, he led his team in scoring. And did you check out that pass? Watch
it. Big fella. Where are they playing this? Those aren't no high school jerseys.
No, in the offseason, you play these games against, like, faculty members. You go to school, play against teachers, play against officers.
Right.
And sometimes you play against other NFL teams.
Shout out to my guy Adam Lefko for the video, by the way. But are they going to hate on him like they did Patty Mahomes? Patty Mahomes, John Dorsey, or not John Dorsey, Brett Veach came out and said, can't play no more.
Did you see him hit that guy during the season and yell? That's what the general manager, Chris Ballard, if he goes and Quentin try to stop him from playing basketball. Certain guys on the squad, you got to let them play, Nick.
I'm being told that video right there might be a little dated. I want to know if he's still playing basketball.
I don't know if he can get his arm behind his back now, big as his biceps.
Time for stories to start your morning. Kawhi Leonard scored 30 points last night, including the game winner against the Nets. Up for a big debate whether he called glass on that last one. Toronto just one game behind the Bucks in the East. Nick, are the Raptors being overlooked?
Once again, I got to say, I think they are. Last year, they were the one seed. Nobody really cared much about them. We were like, oh, their bench mob's great. But I think deep down, everyone said, but if the Cavs can get there, and
well,
then the Cavs swept them. This year, they got better.
Mm-hmm.
They have a far better star player than they did last year. The bench is still excellent. The coaching drop-off has been non-existent. And I feel like we talk about the Warriors, the Bucks, the Sixers, the Celtics, the Thunder, the Rockets, all before we talk about the Raptors. The Raptors, like the Nuggets, the two seeds in both conferences, being overlooked all season.
Yeah, they have been impressive, and it's nice to get one of our marquee players in the league, Kawhi, with all the negative publicity surrounding him leaving San Antonio, back playing at a top level. Their bench is still strong. Fleek, their backup point guard, he gets hurt. Van Fleek, yeah. So they signed Lin Sanity for a few weeks. let's see how that works out.
Moving on to the Rockets now. James Harden scored 31 last night in a win against the Mavs. That's his 30th straight game with 30 or more points. Took him till the very end to do it, but he did it. See how impressive is this accomplishment?
I mean, it's one of the most impressive things I've seen in the NBA the last 30 years. Nick and I talk about all the time, if I want some video, you have to go back to Wilt Chamberlain and the streak that he went on. We just have not seen this. We just can't get used to or make this seem like, oh, this happens. This is special, and we should recognize it every single day.
And I had the tweet ready to go, saved in drafts, congratulating him on the streak ending.
Oh, that's how you have your tweets ready?
Yeah, I got them ready. You know this about me. If I think something's coming,
I
have it
other
ready.
People should know how weird you are.
Because he had 23 with 2.5 minutes left in this game. It took a late rally for him. How impressive is this? 30 games consecutively at 30 points. See, there's only 14 guys in the league right now that have 30 games straight of double digits.
Whoa.
And he's got 30 straight of 30-plus. We shouldn't be numb to what we're
seeing. I think you should
make
a graphic for that. I think
okay, next time. Thank you.
Yes.
Executive producer Chris Carter.
All right, moving on to the Thunder. Paul George had 47 points last night, 12 boards, 10 assists, and not to be outdone, Russell Westbrook broke Wilt Chamberlain's record with his 10th straight triple-double. Byline here, Thunder beat the Blazers 120-111. See, how impressive was the night for OKC?
Man, Paul George, he just keeps doing it. I mean, back-to-back nights, we saw the awesome performance this weekend against Harden in Houston with the huge comeback. And there's a reason why he's starting to be mentioned as far as MVP with Giannis and Harden. He's been special. Man, that decision this offseason, I believe that we don't talk about that enough. Man, him deciding, no, I don't want to be a free agent, test the market, potentially playing with the Lakers. I like what we have here in Russ. I want to be his teammate moving into the future and signing a long-term deal and following up with the best season of his career.
Paul George, I mean, this might have been his best night of the year. 47-12-10 against a good Blazers team that's fighting for playoff positioning that theoretically could catch Oklahoma City in the standings. So he was great, and he was great on a night that Russ really couldn't hit anything from the outside. He was 5 of 19, 1 of 6 from 3. But Russ, he's a special player because he can shoot 28% from the field and still have a quality game thanks to the rebounding and assist numbers.
On to the 76ers now. Yes, they blew the doors off the Lakers Sunday, 143-120. Also, yes, it looks like new addition Tobias Harris is fitting in just fine. So fine, in fact, some have wondered whether or not this lineup, this team, can compete with the league's best. LeBron James was asked if you can compare the Sixers to the Warriors.
It's two different teams, two different makeups. You know, Golden State is a well-oiled machine, and they've been that for the last 5 years. They've added KD, and he fit in perfectly to that puzzle piece. This team has been together for a couple years, but they've added some key pieces to their team just recently. You know, if you talk about Jimmy and you talk about Tobias now, Mike Scott is going to be part of that rotation, as it seems, and Big Boban as well. So we have to see. No one knows. We have to see. And we can't compare, any team right now to Golden State because they've just been together for so long.
What do you think, Nick? How well did the Sixers match up with the Warriors? And maybe there are different ends of the spectrum right now, but can you see them eventually moving into who that team is?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think LeBron has it right, which is it's all projection with Philly. As opposed with Golden State, we know exactly what they are and who they can be. They made no moves of substance at the deadline. Their move was getting Boogie back. And you can say, oh, well, didn't these teams play a few weeks back and Philly won? Yeah, when in a game Clay didn't play because he was sick, Boogie wasn't playing yet, and where the Sixers didn't have Tobias Harris. So you can't really take much from that game. Where they are similar is these are the two most talented starting fives in the league. If the worst player in your starting five, or least accomplished, is J.J. Redick on one side of the coin, and on the other side it's Draymond Green, Boogie, like, who's the worst starting Warrior you pick? Is it Boogie? Is it Draymond? Is it Clay? Whomever it is, it's an excellent, awesome player. That's where they're similar. Now, stylistically, they are very different. Golden State is obviously going to beat you with ball movement and with the greatest shooting we've ever seen. Philly is going to space the floor now, but they want to brutalize you. They want Embiid to brutalize you. They want Simmons to take advantage of his size mismatch, and they want Tobias Harris to be able to do similar things to go along with while JJ can be the stretch shooter. To me, Jimmy Butler is the key. See, if these two teams were to match up, how much can Jimmy Butler elevate his game both ways? Stylistically, though, I don't see the similarities, but I do see the similarities in the talent of the starting five.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler is a wild card, but also Ben Simmons. Golden State, especially in the playoff, if they were to face, Golden State is elite defensively. How will Philly be defensively with this new unit? Like, we don't know that. And late in games, what style will Philly play? We know exactly what Golden State can do. And there's a number of different ways they can beat you. We don't know what Philly's going to do. We don't know if they're going to go to Joel Embiid. We don't know if Jimmy Butler feels like he's got to be able to take the shot. And how is this offense going to run if Ben Simmons is going to be at the point? That space that LeBron James played off of him, how is he going to, how are they going to attack that? Because it clogs up the lane for the rest of the players and it makes it harder on Joel Embiid. So that part or those variables, Ben Simmons' lack of offense and Jimmy Butler, what type of role is he going to play finishing out games? Those are things that the Warriors don't have to worry about.
And then, Nick, personality. How will this team gel? How will this team divvy up play time and, ball possession and all of it?
It'll all be a moot point if they don't gel personality-wise because they won't get to the finals. They're not going to get to the finals unless these guys learn how to play together. And that is a real concern, by the way.
Because I think we underestimate how impressive it is that the Warriors are able to let their personalities take a back seat to the success of the team.
One thing we don't know about the Warriors is in heated situation when you add Boogie Cousins. And Boogie Cousins also is going to be a potential free agent. So how much does Boogie feel like I can help when the Warriors, like say for instance, if they get into that game six like they were in last year with Houston, with his personality, Draymond, if he doesn't come around as far as his shooting,
right.
How does that play out? That's only the kind of variable that we need to see play out with Golden State.
And to your point about how they would defend Philly, Golden State would feel great about four of their five defensive matchups. Draymond guarding Ben Simmons, no problem. Ben Simmons doesn't have as big much of a size advantage as he would over a typical point guard because Draymond's not a point guard. You would hide Steph on JJ. You would have Klay guard Jimmy Butler, KD guard Tobias Harris. Four of those five, you say the Warriors say, we love all these matchups. How much could Embiid punish Boogie Cousins? Because you know on the other end, there's going to be an odd man out as far as Klay, KD, Steph. One of those three guys, JJ's got to guard. Like, you can put Jimmy Butler on one, you can put Tobias Harris on one. One of those guys, you're going to have to find, or Ben Simmons on one, doesn't matter. But you can't put J.J. Redick on Draymond, and you can't put J.J. Redick on Boogie Cousins. So he's got to guard. You know Golden State would have one distinctive advantage. We just don't know who it would be. We know the advantage Philly would have. Joel Embiid on Boogie Cousins, how much could he take advantage of that? And when they're going twos and Golden State with their advantage is going threes, how much does that tilt the equation if these two teams were to meet?
All right, let's get back to the Lakers now. Much drama this season surrounding who could be on the move next season. Several key players have the option of being free agents, including KD, Kawhi, Klay, Kyrie, Kemba, basically all players whose names begin with the letter K. Magic Johnson was asked about the summer of 2019, and he said it's a great class and we just want to get one of them. What do you think, CeCe? Who's the best fit to pair with LeBron in free agency?
Well, I think that LeBron, because of his skill set, and you can even see him now playing with the young Lakers, as he did last year with the Cavs, he's starting to handle the ball more. So I always thought that there was going to be a LeBron in the post. Now, we haven't seen that yet. So as he transitions to an older LeBron, will he be more at the point or will he be at the post? Because to me, that helps determine who should this next player be. And I think that Anthony Davis, because of his game and because I believe he's going to be an all-NBA player for a longer period of time than any of these other players, he would be the best fit in Los Angeles. When LeBron transitions out, decides to retire, they still have that marquee name in Anthony Davis, the way the Lakers have had for the last 40 years. 50 years, that big name guy that can carry it for the Lakers that potentially would draw other free agents to Los Angeles.
And I think that's why the Lakers put such an effort into getting him at the deadline and will do everything they can to trade for him. But Anthony Davis, because he's not a free agent this summer, because New Orleans could decide, you know, we're going to wait and wait. We don't have the offer we want. If we're talking about just the guys who are actually able to pick a team this summer, Kyrie, Kawhi, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, And Jimmy Butler's also one of those guys. But to me, those first four, Kyrie, Kawhi, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson, because of the way LeBron's game can change, and because he, while is a great scorer, his number one attribute is his passing, you can make the argument, every single one of those guys fits perfectly with LeBron. What would LeBron and Kevin Durant look like? Oh, be the best. It would trump KD and Steph as the greatest 1-2 combo we've seen. What would LeBron and Kawhi Leonard look like? Oh, it'd look great. You would have maybe the best defender in basketball, a guy who has established himself for the last 3 years as a high-level elite scorer to pair as the two wings on a team. What would LeBron and Kyrie look like? Oh, we saw that already. They won a championship. What would LeBron and Klay Thompson look like? Klay Thompson getting wide open threes and having maybe the best shooting season of his career. To me, there's no wrong answer. If I have to pick one, I'd pick the guy who's played with LeBron before, who we know they can play at a championship level together, who there's no learning curve there in Kyrie Irving. But it's not like, oh, they didn't get Kyrie, they got Kawhi. There would be any disappointment. Like, the Kyrie of those guys, he's not as good of a player as Kawhi and Kevin Durant. Like, no one would argue that, but we just know they fit well together.
What I would be concerned about, even though they do have a certain amount of chemistry and they have played together on the court, the reason why I wouldn't select Kyrie is because he's also the one most injury-prone, and he's the worst defender on that list. So as far as the free agency, with LeBron not playing a whole bunch of defense. Right. Now, I can't bring in another non-defender into that mix. If they're trying to win championships, I don't think Golden State's going to be the type of team that they are now. But at some point in the playoff, defense becomes important. So I'd probably stay away from Kyrie. I believe he's going to miss more games than those other players. LeBron's getting older, so you need a guy who's going to be in the lineup. And I can't have a guy that's a liability on the defensive end.
How many of these guys want to play with LeBron James? Kevin Durant maybe doesn't want to.
I think the only one that we know doesn't is Durant. I don't think
these guys would be willing to, well, I don't want to say take a back seat, but play with another.
Well, these are different
questions.
I think Kevin Durant's the only one who we have reason to believe from his own words does not think playing with LeBron James is fun.
I don't know if Kevin Durant believes that. I believe that Kevin Durant, you get into a certain type of hierarchy where you can't play. Based on his decision to go to Golden State, he can't play with LeBron because before that happened, guess who used to work out in offseason together? LeBron and KD. So now with LeBron always being the guy, LeBron with the shoe deal, LeBron, you know something? KD is like, I can't play with that guy. So for me, I don't think it's I don't want to play. I just believe where they are as far as basketball history just would not allow him to say, you know something, man, I would like to play with that guy.
And C, tell me if I'm wrong, because I feel like you've been very consistent on this. Of all the pending free agents, if we're just going to strike KD off the list because we don't think it's a real option, the one who you think would be the best, make the Lakers the best immediately, is Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
Of all the options, that he's the guy because of the defensive questions, because age-wise, he and Anthony Davis very similar in age, so it's the same type of trajectory when LeBron starts aging out.
And he's very similar to AD as far as no maintenance. They don't bring a lot of baggage to the locker room. They're real professional.
Not a big crew around them.
No.
Has made it very clear, wants to be in Los Angeles. Now, Jerry West and the Clippers are trying to make sure it's the other nights at Staples Centers that he has a home game. But Kawhi, there would be none of these guys. I didn't even mention Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker would be a great basketball fit with LeBron. He's just, to me, a tier beneath these other guys.
You don't think it's funny? They all start with K. There's like 16.
It is very odd.
It
is an odd coincidence, and I noticed that.
I love
as well.
It. We'll talk about that again.
Let's never talk about
it again
times.
On television.
Speaking of a K, look.
Make sure we have the list, the long one. At least 6, 7, 8.
Another K. Kyler Murray. Did he make the right decision to focus on football? That's ahead on First Things First.
Hey, good.
Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. So the Patriots won Super Bowl 53 over the Rams, and they're still riding on a high. It was time for Bill Belichick to update the old boat. He now has the Roman numeral 8 to represent his 8 rings, 2 with the New York Giants and 6 with the Patriots.
That's remarkable, man. And he didn't waste no time.
No, he didn't.
The Super Bowl was 10 days ago.
Yep.
And he already got there 9 days ago.
Commissioned the work pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
Probably
a half-time. I'm just wondering when that girlfriend's going to become a wife. He's putting rings on his boat. He need to put a ring on that. Hey, he need to put a ring on.
What are you doing? Hey, Dad.
I know people that met her and she introduced herself
as
Bill Belichick's girlfriend.
Yeah, so maybe
she deserves better.
Hey, man.
I still think that both are a little understated.
Some people, that's just what they want to do.
Don't live in sin.
Don't see. Do not appoint your.
I'm trying to make the world. Hey, man. There's a good book that tells you about it.
Okay.
Time for stories to start your morning. Kawhi Leonard scored 30 points last night, including the game winner. Mm-hmm. Against the Brooklyn Nets. Woo! Up for.
They was New Jersey too. When we all with Jenna. We've been doing this a long time.
Nick, are the Raptors being overlooked?
Yeah, when Nick was a baby, we was covering.
Are the Raptors being overlooked? They are. Kawhi's game winner, by the way. More on that later. He ain't mean to go glass, but neither here nor there. They're absolutely being overlooked.
Yes.
The two seeds in both conferences get talked about less than the 3, 4, and 5. It's the Nuggets out west, the Raptors out east. You'd think these two teams don't exist. The Raptors were the one seed last year. They looked great until they ran into their mental blockage in LeBron. They're even better this year. I was worried about the drop-off in coaching from Casey to Nick Nurse. He's been very good. The bench has been good. They're going to miss Fred VanVleet, as you made the point earlier.
Yes.
This is a good one. But, yes, the Raptors are being overlooked, and they absolutely could go to the NBA Finals.
Denver's having a great season, and Golden State going to be the number one seed in the West. So we can understand the number two seed there not getting a lot of hype. But this has to do with Toronto's failure the last couple years. Outside their superstars, team is made up of basically the same type of players and the same players. So Toronto, let's get some respect with Kawhi Leonard there.
All right, to the Bucks now. Big night for Giannis. Dropped 29 points, 17 boards, 8 assists in a 112-99 win over the Bulls. Nick, are the Bucks the best team in the East?
Best team in the East with the best player in the East. Absolutely, unequivocally, yes. I think people are now seeing this year why I was so frustrated watching this team last year. Because, yes, they're better, and Giannis has improved, and Chris Middleton's maintained. But the difference is coaching. I was so frustrated with Jason Kidd and then with the interim coach there. I think it was Joe Prunty. Like, they had something they could have unlocked. They've unlocked it now. They are the number one defense, the number three offense. They are the best. And metrics-wise, they're the best team in all of basketball.
Shooting threes. Second best in the NBA. Bringing Lopez out to the three-point line.
Gosh.
Giannis dribbling, initiating the offense. Man, they're good. They're a nice team to watch how they do it. And they're deep.
And, man, watching Giannis every night, he does something that he's the only person in the league can do. So much fun.
Moving on to the Rockets. Now James Harden scored 31 points last night in a win over the Mavs. That is his 30th straight game with 30 or more points. Took him till the very, very end to do it, but he did. See, how impressive has this been for Harden?
I just hope people look at this or stop looking at it. And, man, this is very impressive. And it's out of necessity. Man, he's got to be able to score. Capella being out, Chris Paul is back in the lineup, but he's not the offensive player he used to be. The Rockets need every bucket, every free throw they can get out of Harden. Special time in NBA history, something like I've never seen before.
Nobody has seen this before unless they watched Wilt. And the only way you could have watched Wilt was if you traveled with the team because it wasn't on television. Like, literally, no one has ever seen this before. And last night, it looked like streak was going to get broken. He only had 23 with 2.5 minutes left, but he was able to score 8 late. There's only 14 guys in the league, C, that have 30 straight 10-point games going. Only 14. He's got 30 straight 30-point games. We've never seen this before.
And finally, Paul George, he had 47 points, 12 boards, 10 assists in a win over the Blazers last night. Damian Lillard had high praise for PG, saying that that dude is the MVP. See, is Lillard right?
Well, it's nice. A lot of times star players, they go out of their way just to put some light on a guy that needs some attention. Giannis, what he's doing, very, very special there in Milwaukee. Harden, what he's doing, second to Wilt. And no one saw that based on the information my partner gave me. So it's nice to see that one of the all-stars is giving a shout-out because it's just not the story of scoring, rebounding. It's about overcoming obstacles, recovering from a horrific leg injury, giving up on the Pacers, and it working out. Man, we thought right now he'd be getting 40 for the Lakers. But no, he decided to stay in the smaller market, not go back to California where he's from. And the guy that no one likes, I like him as a teammate in Russell Westbrook. So for me, it's just not the stretch that he's on now. It's the totality of everything that he did. Man, him and LeBron were going eye to eye in the Eastern Conference. And, man, he was giving LeBron everything he wanted. Then he had the injury, and then we didn't know where his career. Demanded the trade, got a lot of bad media, and made that free agent decision. It's great to see some of our better players in the story of their journey. And Paul George, it's one of the great stories we have in the NBA this year.
And this is, he has now added himself to the list of guys who, post-max contract, superstars in this league, that do not get fat and happy and find ways to grow their game.
Good point.
This is the legacy, part of the legacy of this era of NBA basketball. Not a lot of, with respect, Vin Bakers out there. Not a lot of guys that get the big contract and it's like, well, my work here is done. LeBron, every year, for the entirety of his early prime, found something new to come back with. Steph did the unanimous MVP season, got better. Kevin Durant decided one summer, I'm going to learn how to play help defense at a level I never have. Russ Westbrook loses KD, says, okay, triple-double every night for 3 years running. Come stop me.
Yes.
Harden wins an MVP, gets better. Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid is a guy who is still young enough to where he's so – it's totally expected.
Right,
same with Giannis,
gotcha.
Anthony Davis.
Yes.
But the older guys who are on second or third contracts who are saying, nope, not satisfied. And by the way, a lot of these guys knowing probably not going to win in a championship because the Warriors exist. I want to get better. I love the game. I love what I do. Paul George. Okay, OKC, we're like that in a second-tier contender. Russ is always going to get the headlines. Watch me come out and have the best year of my career.
That's why guys like Ben Simmons or Lonzo Ball, guys that there are parts of their game that they clearly need work on, should look at these guys and say, I could get better. I have this great talent.
Yes.
I could get better, and I could spend time doing it.
Look at the three guys. Look at Kawhi Leonard, how
Kawhi,
he started.
I should have left him out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Couldn't shoot. Just a defensive player. Paul George, defensive player, a lot of upside. We like his length. Couldn't shoot well. I mean, look at these guys. What percentage both these guys shoot behind the three? James Harden, let's not forget, a bench player. He was a bench player in OKC. Is he worth a max contract?
Right.
That used to be the conversation. And now he's in the elite. So, yes, these younger players, they do have the right role models to be able to look after so that this league continues to grow. And it's a credit to our best players, that's why the league is growing the way it is, Nick.
And for the Thunder, the reason there had been a ceiling on them is because the thought had been, I think correctly, probably can't win a championship if Russell Westbrook's your best player. But he's not their best player anymore. And we know you can contend for a championship if he's your second best player because we saw them do it a couple times with Kevin Durant. Now, this year, it might not be eligible for anyone outside of Golden State, but Oklahoma City has to feel like if the player movement we expect to happen happens this summer, they are right there with everybody else where you've got two superstar caliber players. Paul George, just the frontline guy. Credit to him for getting his game to that place.
All right, to the NFL now. In a surprise move, the Cleveland Browns signed running back Kareem Hunt. It reunites Hunt with GM John Dorsey, who drafted him in Kansas City. Hunt was released by the Chiefs after video surfaced of him shoving and kicking a woman last February. Hunt said he is, quote, extremely grateful for this opportunity. He is still awaiting punishment from the NFL. CeCe, what was your reaction when you heard about this new deal?
Well, I wasn't that surprised, and I thought that it would be someone that had some familiar ties. I thought that Matt Nagy, potentially, who was a coach on that Kansas City staff there with Andy Reid and with John Dorsey there in Kansas City, that had all the intel about him. And they had the first interaction with him as a young player. So I thought that they typically in those situations, they feel more comfortable and they can speak to the owner and the other people in the organization with some type of authority because of the length for which and the amount of research that they put into before they drafted him. But this is a story about someone like John Dorsey. And there are people in the business, that being basketball and football, that they're going to give people second chances because they realize it's hard to run an operation in pro sports and not give people second chances. So since he's been in the league, he's given people second chances. Look at the players in Kansas City he drafted. Travis Kelce, he had a marijuana suspension. Phillip Gaines, he had another marijuana suspension. Marcus Peters, man, he was a big-time talent. He had a fight with the coach and was kicked off the team. Tyreek Hill was involved in domestic violence before he came into the league. And then last year, he drafted Antonio Callaway, the big-time talent from Florida, right, who was kicked off the team, credit card use, and fraudulent, marijuana and marijuana. A couple things. He had a rap sheet before he was drafted. And he also signed off on Josh Gordon going to
rehab
coming back, joining the team with stipulations that he had to be able to live a certain way and continue with his counseling to stay on the team. He wasn't able to continue that, so they kicked him off the team. So I feel more comfortable that he's with people who know him. They signed him to a one-year deal compared to a multi-year deal. I believe he will get suspended. And as long as he continues, and that being a path of realizing what he did was wrong, that's why they signed him, and also continuing the education and continuing to seek treatment and help for a condition that he has admitted that he's had or in situations that he's responded poorly in. So I'm glad to see young people that their life is not ruined by one bad decision, because I would be hypocritical if I put people under that. Now, I'm so glad that my career was in the 80s, 90s, and 2000, because I know I wouldn't be a Hall of Famer with all the optics and how difficult it is for professional athletes. But I am going to be a person that's going to believe in second chances, but not all second chances. I do believe that he deserves a second chance, admitting his guilt and continuing to be educated and continuing to seek some type of help of why he reacted that way and why would he would ever react to a woman in that form or fashion.
And as far as the seeking help part, the only concerning part, or the most concerning part to me of John Dorsey yesterday, was he was asked about Kareem and alcohol, and he said, I don't believe Kareem has an alcohol problem. I don't know that he does or doesn't. I'd really want to drill down on that, because there was this incident on film. There was another alleged incident involving a man at a Kansas City nightclub. So very different, obviously, because it involves a man. But it would appear to me the common denominator in both of those could have been alcohol. Whether alcohol was a factor or not, there clearly, if you watch that video, was a rage issue. He was, to me, blinded with rage. And it is one of the, it is not a factor that excuses anything. But it is a factor to where with domestic violence, which is a very specific crime, it is usually about control, misogyny, manipulation. This, just if I'm going to be armchair psychologist looking at it, this looked like a problem with rage. Looked like a problem that got incredibly angry, and whomever was across from him, he was going to react that way. It makes it extra egregious. It was against a woman, against someone that was not equipped to defend themselves. And we, of course, have a double standard for how people can put their men can put their hands on men versus women, and we should. So that is one double standard that is, in my eyes, a good one. But I would not want to be defined by the worst moment of my early 20s. Now, it didn't look like that,
right,
but it was awful. And I'm a big believer in almost everybody. There are a few disqualifying cases, but almost everybody getting a second chance. I'm also a big believer very few people deserve a third. And so Kareem Hunt now has the opportunity to address, when they talk about the necessary professional treatment and a plan that's been laid out, whatever the root causes were. Because if you don't address the root causes of that moment, you're just putting a Band-Aid on it, and something like this could or will happen again. But the Browns didn't have to take this chance. They got Nick Chubb. They have a very promising team, a good storyline. John Dorsey.
Duke Johnson.
Right. Put himself out there to a degree, and I'm glad he did. I don't watch that video, Jenna. You can tell me if you think this is me being, you know, my own male privilege or whatever.
I
don't watch that video and say that's a bad person. Now, I don't watch it and say it's a good person. I watch that video and say that's an awful moment. I don't know if it's a statement of who he is as a human being.
Do either of you worry that an incident like this and him coming back into the lead sets precedents moving forward that, well, it happened with Kareem Hunt and he was taken back in, and I know there's various levels of how bad this could be, but that it might set a precedent moving forward?
The only thing different compared to his issue was there was video. We've had other guys in the league accused of domestic violence, convicted of domestic violence, and they face suspension. No, it's not as if it's tolerated in the league. His only difference is we saw it on video. Well, but we have other guys that have been suspended, and he will be suspended.
And his incident was, I don't know if it was aggravated assault, but some form of assault. It was, to me, the most similar instance is what we saw with Joe Mixon. Now, Joe Mixon's was far more violent as far as the impact, but it was also, it was an instance where they weren't an intimate partner relationship. There wasn't a long-term or repeated, or they were people, I don't want to say strangers, but relative strangers, like the Kareem Hunt situation. And he paid a penalty in college.
And he was drafted.
And he was drafted and plays.
But we also have Ray Rice. We have seen people's career ended over domestic violence. So I don't think that they're setting a precedent. I don't think that him being immediately cut by the Chiefs, no player's like, hey, you know something? I'm getting ready to go out and do that. No, his career was altered. He had 14 touchdowns, I think, this year in 12 games.
And one other thing, just real quick before we move on. And people, I think people need to understand this. The personal conduct policy is in place because guys, the league believes, should be punished. I do not believe it is in place as a deterrent. I don't think there is anyone that is about to commit this type of crime, and the reason they don't is, oh, I could get in trouble. You're not thinking logically.
But could they think the opposite? Like, if I do this, I could, I'll still play football?
I guess my point is, if the on the other end of that push for Kareem Hunt was banishment for life or nothing's going to happen to you, I think he still does the same thing.
Sure.
I don't think the way rage works is you're thinking about consequences. I think you're just reacting. So you've got to get to the root of what caused that to be your reaction, in my opinion, my non-expert opinion.
We will take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Back here, First Things First. In a Super Bowl marked by defense, Stephon Gilmore made the biggest defensive play of the game, intercepting Jared Goff late in the fourth quarter to help seal a Super Bowl win over the Rams. Gilmore also had five tackles, three pass deflections in a game some argued he should have been named MVP. And Stephon Gilmore joining us now.
Thank you.
Hey, Stephon.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations. Has the high worn off yet? I mean, have you woken up one morning and not said, wow, we won the Super Bowl? I mean, how long does that last, that euphoria?
I'm still enjoying it. You know, it's hard to get there. So, you know, I'm still enjoying it. And, you know, it's a blessing to be a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, for people who don't know, I've been knowing Mr. Gilmore for quite some years. He came down to South Florida to train, getting ready for the NFL with the training staff. That's where I was able to work with him. And after being in Buffalo, if you would think, because we were talking off the air, he was shocked that New England called. Like, he was like, Bill Belichick wants me? And we talked about the overall confidence, being a pure cover guy, having tremendous size and speed, what that did for your game. Because there were some times in Buffalo where people questioned how good you were. Were you worth that big draft pick? But signing with New England as an elite player, where did Bill Belichick take your confidence and allow your game to grow to?
You know, anytime a organization like New England, you know, wants you excited. You come in and you like, you seeing how they work and you know, they pushing you to become a better player. You know, you just go in with your head down and work hard and, you know, he put you in a position to make plays. And I was already a great player, but he brought the best out of me and I became better.
And you didn't have to change an awful lot. A lot of people think because through the years, we've seen a lot of veteran players go to New England. It's like, oh, all of a sudden it's the New England way. But you were playing, you've always been that way. You've always been low-key. You've always been very, very modest as a great college player into Buffalo. So you felt as if that would be a perfect fit compared to what we hear in the media. Oh, man, these guys don't fit into New England. You felt it was a good fit for you.
It was a great fit for me. I feel like I was playing like that in Buffalo. But, you know, playing in New England, it's, you know, people see it more. And, you know, you get in better positions and, you know, you're in the playoffs every year, and it's a great opportunity.
Let's talk about that play that we keep showing on a loop, the pick that didn't quite ice the game, but it put you darn close to icing the game. Devin McCourty had a quote that came out after the game saying that Brian Flores, who's now the head coach of the Dolphins, told you guys we're going to play more zone than we typically play. We're going to confuse them with it. And then in the biggest spot, we're going to have a cover zero blitz. Is that, I mean, first of all, is that an accurate portrayal of what Brian Flores said? And take me through the game where you guys are doing something different than what you typically do, playing that much zone, and the trouble you saw it giving the Rams.
Yeah, we changed it up. We knew that we was gonna come in and, you know, they was gonna think we was gonna be playing a lot of men, and we changed it up and played some zone, and he was kind of confused and disguised a little bit. So, you know, we just changed it up and made it confusing for him and just played aggressive on the back end.
And then on that play in particular, so where you do decide in a big spot where it looked like the Rams were driving to tie the game after you guys got the first and only touchdown of the game, you go cover zero. I know in real time you're probably not thinking anything, but taking us back, what's going through your mind pre-snap, during the snap, and once the play's over?
You know, we ran a couple cover zeros throughout the season, but on that particular play, you know, he tried us on a deep ball the play before and missed it with Brandon Cooks, and then we came back and hit him with a blitz zero. And, you know, we knew the ball had to come out, and he just kind of, you know, I wouldn't say panicked, but tried to give him a chance, and I was able to see the ball before him.
Stephon, we've spoken to a number of players who lost the Super Bowl who couldn't watch it. Took them a long time to watch it. Coaches sometimes the same thing. You tweeted recently you went back and watched the Super Bowl. What stood out from you? Were there things that happened that you don't even remember because it was just such an unbelievable experience to you? Tell me about that process.
You know, sometimes when you're playing in a game, you don't really know everything that happened up front and, you know, in between the lines. But, you know, our front played very physical, you know, a couple of times. You know, our linebackers hitting their O-linemen, knocking them down. Very physical game up front, and that allowed us to play very physical on the back end.
That game plan, people during the telecast failed to mention that Brian Flores, now the head coach for the Miami Dolphins, the game plan that he put together, how he changed it up, how you did had different defensive fronts, the physicality of that. For Miami Dolphins fans and those fans of the NFL who don't know about Flores, because, Bill, you're not going to do a bunch of interviews, who is he? What type of teacher is he? And what do you see going forward with the Miami Dolphins there in the AFC East?
You know, he's a technician. He's very technical sound. And, you know, even when you're doing great, he's getting on you, trying to get you to do better, and he's getting the best out of his players. So he's a technician. He's smart. You know, he knows how to use his players.
When you went back and rewatched the Super Bowl, were you as surprised as the rest of us Todd Gurley wasn't more involved for the Rams?
Yeah, I was surprised. He's a great back. You know, he's one of the best backs in the league. And, you know, we stopped the run. I don't think they rushed for that many yards. And, you know, they start passing it a little more. And, you know, I don't know why he didn't play more.
How much of your game plan leading up to it, now that it's after the fact, I feel like we can talk about it, was based around slowing down Todd Gurley, who had been throughout the year their best offensive player?
That was the number one goal. You know, all the other stuff was key, but that was the number one goal, is to stop him from running the ball.
Well, lucky for you, he didn't actually run the ball, so that went, you were very successful. So, look, we spent so much time talking about a handful of teams, very successful teams in the NFL, the Patriots clearly one of them. And we were all a little bit surprised when you adopted this mindset of we have a chip on our shoulder, at least some of the guys did. Julian did, Brady did. Yo, you don't believe in us? Let me show you what we can do. But you guys are the Patriots. You're a cut above, seemingly, all the other teams. It was hard for a lot of people to buy into that. Yeah. And we wondered if the whole team believed in that mantra of us against the world kind of thing. Tell me what the mindset was. When you guys were, you had a couple losses in December and you were struggling a little bit, this idea that, hey, we're going to get back even though people don't believe in what we're doing.
Yeah, we heard the talks around, you know, everywhere that, you know, we wasn't this, we wasn't that. But we believed in each other and we pushed each other every day and we didn't point the finger. And we knew we had a great team. We knew we can get to where we wanted to go. And, like Coach always say, real football starts in the playoffs. So I think we played our best football in the playoffs.
What's Tom Brady like as a teammate?
He's a great teammate. You know, he's, you know, one of the hardest workers I ever played with. Smart. He comes to work every day. You know, he don't like losing reps, whether it's one-on-ones, seven-on-seven. You know, he hate losing. And, you know, he's a great teammate to compete against every day and push his players.
When you sign with the team, this is going to sound like an odd question, but there's a reason for it. How did he introduce himself to you?
He said it was off-season workouts, and he was like, happy to have you on this side now instead of playing against you. So it was a great.
Oh, because you guys, you guys had met each other and playing against each other. I was going to say, because we've heard from guys that signs, he walks over and says, "Hi, I'm Tom," and everyone's like, "Yeah, we know you're. We know you're Tom Brady."
He did that, but you know, we played against.
Isn't it time for you to get invited to Montana or California? Him and Edelman, man, they're jet set now. They're playing catch and everything. Shouldn't they have a DB out there, bro? Shouldn't you be checking him up a little bit?
I'm gonna ask him about that.
Or wait till Brady and Edelman are in Montana. You can go to Edelman's house and get that Super Bowl MVP trophy that should have been yours anyway. Listen, I know you're not going to disparage your teammate. Was there, after the game, when the confetti's falling, before it's been announced, did you think for a moment, I might have won this thing?
To be honest, I was just happy we won a Super Bowl. It's hard to get there. You know, losing last year, it was very hard to swallow that pill, and getting back and winning it, that was a great feeling for me.
All right, I got to ask one selfish question, but it's on our list, so I think it's allowed.
Everything you do is selfish. Uh-huh. Go ahead, homie.
You guys played 12 quarters of playoff football. 10 of them, the defense was extraordinary. Two quarters, a team got to you. Happened to be my hometown team, the Chiefs. We were talking about...
You're my guy versus his guy, Patty Mahomes. He's slow to the question.
We were talking about Patrick Mahomes off the air. You two are the two favorites to come out of the AFC next year. What is going up against that offense like? You played them twice this year, both times. Shut them out in the first half or shut them down in the first half, and then they got to you in the second half. Tell us a little bit about Patrick Mahomes, that Chiefs offense.
Very explosive. You know, they have explosive players, great running game. Sammy Watkins is a great player. I mean, Tyreek Hill is, the fastest guy I ever played against. So, and Mahomes, he makes those guys so great. He buys time, and he has a strong arm. So it's a hard offense. It's you lose sleep at night thinking about that offense.
Did you get your ring already?
Not yet.
When does that happen?
They come up with the design. They have a little committee, and they submit stuff. Yeah. It's going to have a lot of bling, though.
But you had said real quick before you go, your first year with the Patriots, you get to the Super Bowl, and you guys don't win it. And what was your concern at leaving the field that game?
You just don't know if you'll get back. You know, it's hard to get back.
Did you have concern Tom might walk?
No.
Okay.
But it's just...
Do you have concern Tom ever might walk?
He's... The way he works and the way he prepares is, he can play as long as he wants to play.
70-year-old Tom Brady. Yeah. Stephon Gilmore, congratulations. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for spending the morning with us.
Great to see you.
Appreciate it,
Make sure you get the ring.
Yeah, New England's got good players. We can stop saying that.
Okay.
It's all the coaching and everything.
Much more
they got
right
great
after
players.
This.
The dude's a baller. He's been a baller since high school. Then went to South Carolina. Hey, man, they still pay you,
though. Come on, man.
On Saturday, world featherweight champion Leo the Earthquake Santa Cruz puts his belt on against Rafael Big Bang Rivera live at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app. What up, Steve?
He's laughing because they're featherweights named Big Bang and Earthquake.
Dude's name is Santa Cruz. You don't want to be no Earthquake in Santa Cruz.
Okay, that's a good point as well. I agree with you on that. That's good geological humor.
All right, we'll get to Kyler Murray in a second, but first... Paul George with the big dunk, two of his 47 points.
Oh, it's not getting old. Paul George is for real. Another sensational game. Last night, check him on the pick and roll. Split the double team, one dribble. Give me that.
You usually don't see guys elevate their game this much at this stage in their career. Usually at the year you're at with Paul George, it's maintaining. He got better.
America, I hate to tell you, but my partner here told me about this guy. I hate to tell you
about Luka. Yeah, Mavs and Rockets. Nick has been on Luka's corner
since he was 16 years old.
Yeah, way before he got into the league. Look at Luka showing off the handles, step back jumper.
I mean, when you're the best player in the second best league in the world at 17, it's going to transfer to the pros.
And, Nick, I had one of my NBA sources was in direct conflict with you. Didn't think he was as athletic. Mm-hmm. And maybe when he gets to the U.S., he's going to be like 6'5". He's taller and he's more of a...
Pistons, Wizards, Bobby Portis going up for the dunk. Thon Maker has other ideas.
All right, now this was another guy came from overseas that I was very high on in the draft. People thought the Bucks overdrafted him. I loved the pick. Didn't work out there. I like his athleticism, his length. I think he still can grow as a basketball player. I haven't been playing that long. Hopefully in Detroit, he can grow his game more because I still think he can be a special defensive player.
Yeah, he wasn't happy there in Milwaukee with his role. I'm glad that they moved him to give him a chance to be able to grow his game.
Knicks and Cavs, Mario Hezonja going up for the big dunk.
All right, now we're 3-for-3 on Euro players. My old scouting reports are 3-for-3 on foreign players, I should say. Hezonja was a trash-talking, dunk contest-winning maven in Europe.
What's his name?
Hezonja.
Mario Hezonja.
Mario, put it on ya. Hezonja right there. Listen, I don't know. I just added that.
Could be a boxer.
He was a top 10 pick with the Magic. Did not work out for him, but he's always been able to do that. Hasn't had a lot of
trash. I thought he was just a jump shooter. He's a high flyer.
You were stereotyping.
Well, I mean, ain't many dudes can elevate like that have that type of tip.
Hezonja.
Moving on to Heisman winning quarterback Kyler Murray. He is picking football as his career choice, putting baseball on hold for now. And while there are questions about his diminutive stature, he is still projected by most to be a first-round pick. However, it is that height issue or lack thereof that could scare off some teams. According to reports, the Giants are one of those teams. They pick fifth. They consider Kyler a little bit too small for their liking. CeCe, what will Kyler Murray have to do to sway NFL teams before the draft?
Well, I don't believe he's going to have to do a lot, because if you look at, not only do we have 8 new coaches in the NFL, I think the number count is around 20 or 22 of the 32 teams have offensive-minded head coaches. The league that is played on Sundays and Mondays and sometimes Thursday is looking a lot like what we've enjoyed through the years on Saturday. So since these things have happened, also the rule changes, the success lately of Baker Mayfield transitioning from the same offense to the Cleveland Browns, I believe all these things are the reason why we're seeing a guy potentially 5'10", deciding I don't want to play professional baseball now. I prefer to be an NFL starting quarterback. So I do believe he will be a top 10 pick because of how things have changed in pro football. And, man, all those new coaches, they're willing to take a chance in this NFL with a smaller guy.
So this isn't about what I think he'll be as a pro. This is about what he's going to have to do between now and when the draft is, the first round of the draft, to hear his name called. And there's a couple things I think are going to be key. I think that statement yesterday was key. Making it clear, I'm not going to try to do both. Even if he still loves baseball, keep that to himself. Go ahead.
And realizing that the people who did try to play both Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders, what they did, they play the position that is very more athletic ability and gift. As a tailback, Bo Jackson, we can say we're going to call pitch 28 or 18, whatever the numbering system is. We're going
to
pitch the ball.
Studying.
That's almost the same play that he ran when he was 8, 10, 12 years old.
Deion Sanders, cat coverage.
I got that cat. You don't have to be in the huddle.
He didn't go to the huddle. So you could not play both sports as a quarterback. It was never going to be allowed to happen, and I don't think you could be successful doing it. So the first thing was that statement, make it clear. The next thing is I do want to see how he interviews. Because here's what I know. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the smaller quarterbacks. Russell Wilson, even though he still was way underdrafted, he interviewed brilliantly. He is a guy that walks into a room and you say, I will follow you wherever you're
great
going.
Great point, yes.
Baker, you were on this from shaking
I interviewed
hand
Baker on the field.
Right, at Ohio State.
I had to touch the groceries and everything, look right at them too.
Of course you did.
And so Baker has a commanding presence.
Right.
I'm not saying Kyler doesn't. And it's possible he has one football
and you're
presence.
Also not saying you need one to be a successful quarterback.
I think it's helpful. I think it's helpful, especially if you're going to be a young starting quarterback to lead these grown men. But and he might have a different football presence than media presence. In media, he has been, I would say, understated almost to a fault. And there is an outlier X factor, which is his dad has seemed very heavily involved.
Yes.
And we know a lot of these quarterback dads.
Woo,
it's typically Texas 7-on-7 kid who then the dad wants to be the offensive coordinator. That I remember, to go way back, David Carr's dad was going to Texans practices when he was the first overall pick for that franchise. So there are instances of this. There's obviously Marinovich's dad, which was a different story.
Yeah.
I think teams are going to want to find out.
It's something that we should watch.
Absolutely. And then the other thing they're going to be looking for at the combine, because I think he's going to throw great. I totally agree with Chris.
You think he'll throw at the combine?
Well, yes. Don't come to the combine and not throw. He should do everything at the combine. When you make the announcement, and Nick, that's a very good point, to NFL teams, if you're going to win me a Super Bowl, I need some things. I need you to be committed to me, offseason, you're committed to me. I need you to repeat this. I'm here to win Super Bowl. Because that's what we hear as the those are the things that franchises want to hear. And you don't want a guy, you can't be a part-time NFL player, let alone a part-time NFL quarterback. So all those speaking points, I think you're right about that, Nick. You have to get those out because that's the elephant in the room. Is he going to be committed to our organization?
And so I think at the combine, all his football measurables, meaning his speed, the shuttle, the accuracy he's going to do well in. We know the height is the reason that some people, such as myself, don't think he's a top 10 pick. The measurable we don't know yet is, put your hand up to mine, Chris Carter. Like, we don't know how those hands are going to measure out. We know that the two quarterbacks in the league 6 feet or under, Breeze and Russ, they both have big hands, 10 1/4 inch hands. Baker has smaller hands, but he's a little bit taller and stockier than those guys. Like, If he's the shortest, the slightest of frame, and has smallest hands, then I think there will be more teams than just the Giants that say, I don't think we can take him. So I'm very curious to see what the hand size is. I know I sound like the old school scouts, who I'm not always a huge fan of.
No, it's important.
Some of it matters.
It's something I overlook. And I'm into the weather. Right. I'm into height. Yeah. I'm in the hand size. I'm into those things. Great point that you bring up. We need to see that measurable.
Yeah. And I'm happy to put my hand up against yours if you want to feel better about your hand against his.
No problem.
I have little paws. It's amazing I can even hold
pulse?
On to pets.
You have little paws?
Coming up, Paul George playing himself into the MVP conversation next on First Things First. Antoine Walker sits down and hangs out with us. Antoine, good morning. Thanks good for coming back, you, hanging out with us.
Yeah.
Boy, things are really getting fun in the NBA right now. We're talking Kyrie Irving and his, let's call it, a love affair with Boston. According to Danny Ainge, his future in Boston is, quote, more like an engagement, with the marriage coming July 1st.
I think they're sleeping together. I don't know about engagement. They're sleeping together. Mm-hmm.
You don't like that? You don't like that? No.
And we are moving on. While Irving has been connected to other suitors this offseason, including the Knicks and Lakers, according to our own Chris Broussard, Danny Ainge has his heart firmly set on Kyrie and oh so much more.
Danny, and that's why Danny Ainge, even with all the hints, Kyrie kind of backing off, saying I'm planning to stay here. Even with all that, Danny Ainge is still all in on keeping Kyrie. And he's also all in on going after Anthony Davis. Why? Because he understands Kyrie Irving is a superstar. And while we could be good, really good kind of, without Kyrie, we can't be great without Kyrie. And obviously in Boston, it's about being great and winning championships. Danny Ainge knows every one of those 17 championships they had a superstar leading the way.
Antoine, this is a question we will be asking now until the end of the season. Should Kyrie stay in Boston? What do you think?
I think he should stay based on Boston's roster. When you really look at the young pieces they got in play, the only person really coming up a free agent, I think, is Al Horford, who has an option, but he's not going to opt out of $30 million. So you got everybody coming back. Do I think he's going to stay? No. I believe he's going to leave. I think Kyrie's has shown us it's not about necessarily winning championships with him. I think New York is probably the place that presents the best option for him for what he wants to do. With the shoe deal he has with Nike, the individual where he could be a star there going back home. I just don't think he's a true Celtic. You know, it's like when you're a Celtic, you kind of want to be there. Mm-hmm. I played there 7 years of my career. I saw Paul Pierce there. I know how true Celtics are. I don't think Kyrie's yet a true Celtic and believes he's a true Celtic.
Well, listen, to Broussard's point, of course, for the Celtics, all about championships. Any organization that's won one title in 30 years, same as the Mavericks, is, of course, focused on nothing but the championships. But the point that I think he's making that I would be very interested to hear the other side to is Danny Ainge is all in on Anthony Davis, even if Kyrie Irving leaves. Because, of course, he's all in on keeping Kyrie Irving. Like, what's your alternative? Like, it's not like, well, if Kyrie leaves, we've got we're in the running for Klay Thompson. We're in the running for Kawhi Leonard. The whole process was, listen, we're going to trade away KG and Pierce for this great deal with the Nets. We're going to stockpile these picks. We're going to hit in the draft, which, to their credit,
They've done all those things.
We are going to sign a superstar and trade for a superstar. Check, check. Sign Gordon Hayward. Okay, well, pause on him. Trade for Kyrie Irving. Now we're having to pause on him. And Danny Ainge has no alternative. This is a The backup plan is, wait, who are we? The backup plan is we've got Al Horford on $30 million, mm-hmm. Gordon Hayward on $20-plus million, and a nice young core now that we are 8 years removed from the Pierce KG trade.
Well, if he leaves, he doesn't necessarily – they don't bottom out. I mean, I like Terry Rozier. I mean, I think he proved himself that he can be a valuable point guard in this league. Whether he's a starter or not, I don't know, but he could be a very productive point guard for them. They don't go rock bottom. I think you got to – and they got picks.
No, so that's the thing.
You don't bottom out. I mean, but you do offer – I mean, there's no question. Danny Ainge has to offer Kyrie Irving the max. Obviously, you want him to stay. That's no way around that. Anthony Davis, I think it's tough because you got to give up some young pieces to get Anthony Davis. I think what makes that attractive – I like Jason Tatum. I think he's a star in the making. Jaylen Brown, he digressed a little bit this year, but he's a two-way player. I mean, it's hard to find those guys, and you may not find them through the draft. So mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily sold on giving up everything for Anthony Davis because these guys are established now, and they're ready to turn the corner.
Okay, now let's say Kyrie does leave, because I don't think that they have a chance at Anthony Davis long term unless Kyrie's there. They are friends. They have talked about playing together. So for me, I understand Chris Broussard. Yeah, Danny Ainge in Boston, they're all in on Kyrie. Well, they don't have any other choice.
Right.
Like, they don't have any other choice. And the domino effect, if Kyrie decides to leave, yeah, this is a great year of free agency. We don't hear people saying they want to go to Boston, though.
Because
we have Anthony Davis's dad saying that they treated IT wrong and he doesn't want his son there long term. If you think that does not have an effect on his boy, then you're missing something there. Look at the list of other free agents. Like, they're not coming to Boston. So Danny Ainge, he better get Kyrie signed. He better hope that they can get Kyrie signed and then land Anthony Davis, because I don't like the plan B or the plan C, because this was the plan. If LeBron James happened to leave, I know this plan because I got this from LeBron James's spokesperson, Nick Wright. When LeBron James decided to leave the East Coast, you got to have your team right on the brink
100%.
To pounce on it, to be a dominant team. So let's look at what's going around. All right, Toronto, they have Kawhi on a rental, but they're looking to potentially rent AD or do something else. Philadelphia, they're going to be stacked for a while. They got Joel Embiid. They got their superstar, how to move forward. Giannis could be MVP of the league there in Milwaukee. So for me, Danny Ainge is the one under the gun.
Right, and they were, and sorry to interrupt, but the timeline was, the reason they weren't pulling the trigger earlier was because they were waiting on LeBron. And they pulled the trigger. The one move they made where they had to give up assets was a move that weakened LeBron, getting Kyrie Irving. And they have been building towards LeBron either aging out of it or leaving the conference as he did. And how long have we heard Anthony Davis being tied to the Boston Celtics? 3 years? Since
a couple
the
years
moment
at least.
He signed his mm-hmm. extension in New Orleans. The idea that they are going to try to sell, which is, well, even if Kyrie leaves and Anthony Davis doesn't come here, listen, it's still part of the plan. No. The plan missed entirely. Now, it's not like they're going to turn all of a sudden into the Grizzlies. I'm not arguing that. I think Tatum will be an all-star. I think Jaylen Brown's a good player. I like Terry Rozier as a third guard on a team, which is, I think, what you're talking about. But they then all of a sudden take an enormous step back. Even if Toronto loses Kawhi, mm-hmm. they're still behind them. Like they are a second-tier Eastern Conference team in that scenario.
Without question, they take a step back, because you lose a guy like Kyrie Irving in his prime, who's a finisher, who's a champion. You can't afford to lose him. But I don't think Kyrie's a Celtic. I just don't think he's bought into that whole Celtic tradition. I think he respects it. He understands what being a Celtic is, but I don't think they use the word married. I don't think he's married to the Celtics. I don't believe that. I think in free agency, he's going to look for happiness. I think he proved that when he left Cleveland, because if he was about winning, you would have stayed in Cleveland and been in 10, 11, 12 mm-hmm. finals easily, and he chose not to do that.
All right, Antoine, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show.
You can say it. They sleep in it.
Actually cannot say that. Cannot say that. Coming up, Super Bowl champ Stephon Gilmore joins the show next.
I know this guy.
How you doing?
What's up, baby?
Good.
On Saturday, world featherweight champion Leo the Earthquake Santa Cruz puts his belt on the line against Rafael Big Bang Rivera live at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here with Antoine Walker, and we are talking about the Sixers. They blew the doors off the Lakers on Sunday, 143-120. And it looks like new addition Tobias Harris is fitting in just fine. So fine, in fact, some have wondered whether or not this lineup, this team, can compete with the league's best. LeBron James was asked if you can compare the Sixers to the Warriors.
It's two different teams, two different makeups. Golden State is a well-oiled machine, and they've been that for the last 5 years. They've added KD, and he fit in perfectly to that puzzle piece. This team has been together for a couple years, but they've added some key pieces to their team just recently. You know, if you talk about Jimmy and you talk about Tobias now, Mike Scott is going to be part of that rotation, as it seems, and Big Boban as well. So we have to see. No one knows. We have to see. And we can't compare, any team right now to Golden State, because they've just been together for so long.
All right, Antoine, what do you think about these two teams? How well do the Sixers match up with the Warriors?
I think they match up with them from
the stop.
I think they do. I think it's one mismatch. I'm gonna tell you, it's one mismatch. I think Steph Curry has a unique advantage, because now you got to play JJ Redick on him, and JJ can't guard him off the dribble. Yep. Not that great in pick and roll. He's a chaser.
I will try to help you out. What if you just put JJ on Draymond?
But then there's still one mismatch.
Then you can switch them. You can still switch.
Go ahead.
That's the only mismatch. But I like everything else, because now you can switch 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. And they can do that with Philly. Most teams that play Golden State are not able to switch 1 through 5. Well, Steph is getting the opportunities to take on the big. And even though Joel Embiid cannot step out and guard Steph, but he can actually step out and move his feet. Mm-hmm. So it makes for a different matchup. And then Cousins is not that guy in the middle, like a Clint Capella, who's going to dive to the basket and dunk it. He moves a little slower, so you'll be able to get back to him. So they match up really well with them, because they can switch just as much. But they do have that one advantage, though. That Steph Curry over J.J. Redick advantage is strong.
It's enormous. And it was, when we were discussing this earlier, the point that I made is, for the Sixers side, there is one distinct advantage: Joel Embiid's offense against Boogie Cousins. Because I do not think Boogie's a quality defender. I don't think that's mm-hmm. ever been who he is. Mm-hmm. We have seen how dominant Joel Embiid is, and what Boogie can do is lean on you, try to use some size, but he can't, and no leaning on Joel Embiid. He's 3 inches taller and 50 or 40 pounds heavier. Like, so that is an enormous advantage for the Sixers. But the flip side is, they got no answer for Steph. They got none. And if they try to change things, like you were saying, see, all right, so we're going to put JJ on Draymond and just trust that Draymond's not going to take him down and use a size advantage. Fine. So we got JJ on Draymond. All right, so then we're going to put Jimmy Butler on Steph. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. So Ben Simmons, he guarding KD. So, all right, so that leaves Tobias Harris on Klay Thompson. I don't love that. Like, there's...
He's an easier guard because he's not dribbling the ball too much.
He's not dribbling the ball, but it is putting... And I understand Clay's probably not going to beat you off the dribble much at all, to mm-hmm. your point. But there is one guy on each team that the other team doesn't have a great matchup for, because it's the guy on each team that nobody in the league's got a great matchup for. Nobody's got a great matchup for Steph. Nobody's got a great matchup for Embiid.
I just think I think, Nick, you like to make lists. We can go through the top 3 NBA teams in history, and you can match them up against the Warriors, and our arguments would be very, very similar.
Sure.
That's how good the Warriors are. Absolutely. I wasn't trying to debate, killing the 76ers.
No, I'm not killing the 76ers.
But Golden State is really special and presents, no matter what era, they present a number of problems for any team.
I like Klay Thompson, but I think you can go, if you got to make an adjustment, I'll put J.J. Redick on Klay Thompson and let him chase. Klay Thompson's not going to post him up that much. He may do it a couple times in the game. That's not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. Now you go with Jimmy on Steph, which mm-hmm. you want to have your best defender on that. Now Tobias Harris, you put him on KD. And not saying, obviously, we know KD has gotten a distinct advantage, but he's another guy that's going to work hard. He's not going to bully him. He's going to try to defend him. And then you got Jeff Ennis coming off the bench. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with Jonathan Simmons. Well, I don't know if he's been, he's been hurt early in the year. If you get him back, now you got another body to throw at KD, because you got to be able to put multiple guys on KD, to me, and Steph if you're the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, where these two teams are similar also is They have the two best starting fives in basketball and a lot of question marks on the bench. If you're the Warriors, like Sean Livingston, I know it's going to come playoff time. He's going to shoot that herky-jerky eight-footer where it looks like his arm dislocates. He's going to shoot 85% on him. But, like, that is Sean Livingston as your number one backup guard is a question mark. Andre Iguodala, every year it seems like he has a different slight postseason tweak, but then every year in the finals, he makes a big play.
He's starting to turn on now.
Absolutely. Yep. No, he knows how to moderate his workload to peak at the end of the season. But after that, like, the Warriors' most consistent bench player this year has been Jonas Jerebko. Like, but that has been the last few years. They've been thin on the bench. For the Sixers, you mentioned, it's a lot of question marks. It's T.J. McConnell's your backup guard, who's been good for them. It's Korkmaz as your backup wing. Jonathan Simmons, who we'll see. He got 1 minute in his first game with him. And then there's Mike Scott. There's Boban for a few minutes a night. Like, when you build teams like this, the Warriors, it's been over more time. The Sixers, it's immediate, you know, it's been in the short term. But you are going to be very top-heavy. Neither of these teams, both, let me rephrase it. Both of these teams, the math is totally different with one injury. Even the Warriors, as talented as they are, we know one injury changes it. And the Sixers, they don't have the depth to deal with an injury to any of these players.
Antoine, are the Sixers, though, the only team that could eventually become the Warriors that are presently constituted in the NBA right now? Could you look at them and say, if they learn how to play together and they stay healthy and they all stick around in Philly, this team could become the Warriors in a few years?
The only other team in the East that probably can get to that level, I mean, we talked about them earlier, is the Celtics, because they have multiple guys that can score the basketball. They're young. Mm-hmm. They can do some different things offensively that other teams cannot do. But I don't know if they're going to buy into that. And they have a finisher, a real finisher, a guy who's done it on the big stage at the biggest time, and Kyrie Irving. Where they, even though Steph Curry, as good as he is, they have the mismatch because now Steph has to play some defense.
I would go with Milwaukee. They got the best player. If you get one other superstar, because Golden State, we're never going to see a team like that. So you're either trying to get two or three guys together. Giannis and another superstar in Milwaukee could be appealing.
No team, past, present, or future, will ever be this Warriors team. You've got your best player and your second best player. Argue who they want. They're both going to finish their career top 20 all-time guys, maybe top 15 all-time guys. Your third best player is the second greatest shooter in the history of basketball. Your fourth best player is a defensive player of the year. And your fifth best player is an all-NBA caliber center. Like, no team ever. You go back to the Celtics when there's only eight teams and they had seven Hall of Famers. They didn't have a unit like this. And I appreciate you repping for the green today. We need a little more of that on this show.
All right, Antoine, stick around. Coming up, who should the Lakers be targeting this offseason? Magic Johnson has an idea. Wait till you hear what that is next on First Things First. Back here with Antoine Walker, we are going viral. Fourth grader Ja'Cory broke the internet with this crossover. Check out the ref. Clearly was not expecting these moves.
That's wrong. That's wrong right there.
That's tough right there.
Inside out. And then
and
the crossover.
Yeah.
Wearing the long sleeves underneath.
Yeah.
Fourth grader.
The point guard's got the highlight. But number 20 is likely to be on the show in the future.
Man, so we're talking
you can't teach
10 years old.
Oh, yeah, the big goofy one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're liable to be following him. Yeah, absolutely. The big guy.
You got to be able to shoot, though. The league has changed now. I would agree with you.
Wait, you're saying, hold on.
I was trying to
figure out how old the kid was, and then I see it's on the graphic. You're saying number 20, the kid that got mixed, might be on the show as a pro?
Absolutely. The probability.
Because of his height.
Yes. Okay. Okay. All right, mark it down. Anonymous number 20.
Guys, I can't mark any more down. I have 37 pages of things I've marked down from the two of you already.
What are you talking about? But
the 16 things today alone that we have marked down where he's right. And you are not as right. Back to the Lakers. Much drama this season surrounding who could be on the move next season. Several key players have the option of being free agents, including KD, Kawhi, Klay, Kyrie, Kemba. Antoine, if your name starts with K, you are most likely going to be a free agent this offseason. Magic Johnson was asked about the summer of 2019, and he said, hey, it's a great class. We just want to get one of them. Antoine, who's the best fit to pair with LeBron in free agency?
This is such a hard question. I think it's the obvious. You know, obviously, you start with Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. But I don't think neither one of those guys are going to L.A. I think they got individual missions of their own that they're going to take care of. But I think the best fit, that's Klay Thompson to me. I think Klay Thompson will be the best fit. He's a knockdown shooter. LeBron needs a shooter. I don't see LeBron coming off the ball any point. I mean, I look at some of the point guards. You look at Kemba Walker. You look at Kyrie Irving, and you're like, well, maybe one of those guys fit better with him because he has sets with Kyrie. But I don't think LeBron James is coming off the ball. So I think if he can add Klay Thompson, and Klay Thompson is a two-way player. He can go, you know, he's a good defensive player. I like him with LeBron. Then after that, it gets kind of tricky because I don't think Kyrie goes back with him. Mm-hmm. And then it's probably Kemba Walker after that.
Well, I mean, you're out of people. This is the point that I was making when the Anthony Davis thing came up. And people, and the question was, well, would you trade everything? Of course you trade everything. These all-NBA caliber players, we know all of them by first name. Kemba Walker, if we're being honest, is a tier a tick beneath that.
Yes.
Jimmy Butler, who's a pending free agent, at this point in his career right now, unless something changes, is a tier a tick beneath that. So it's James Harden's on a long-term deal. It's Paul George's on a long-term deal. It's Steph Curry's on a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. And these four guys and Anthony Davis.
Right.
Okay, so the answer is who fits best? Whichever one wants to go. Like, there is no, well, listen, Kawhi, we'd love to have you, but we're holding out hope. No, you sign it that moment. And because of the style of player LeBron is, everybody fits with him. Like, it's not like any of these guys we'd be like, oh, that's a bad basketball player.
I don't know about that.
Who would?
I don't know. He played with KD. I don't know if he's ready to let KD go like that. LeBron dominates the ball.
Yes.
So
Kyrie,
I don't know.
Those are two right there on the list.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we know he fits with Kyrie.
Well, obviously it didn't fit. Kyrie left.
Oh, agreed.
Where LeBron is playing right now, mm-hmm. LeBron is Howard. Kyrie is not changing his style. That's the reason why Brad Stevens and him are not working. What's LeBron going to do? Like, we thought LeBron was going to play in the post. Like, we thought he was going to come off more pick and rolls. But obviously, at this stage, in this window, he's deciding that he's going to be on the ball. How do him and Kyrie, because Kyrie is not good off the ball.
Yeah, no, I'm figuring, too, Kyle Kuzma's going to be there. If this Anthony Davis stuff doesn't happen, I'm figuring Kyle Kuzma's going to be there. You got him at the three. Play a little four. You add a Klay Thompson to that now with LeBron James playing point forward. Now you got a pretty nice your top three looks real good.
I agree with that. And when we talked about this months ago, Klay is, in my opinion, he's clearly a tick below Kevin Durant and Kawhi. And you can make the argument Klay versus Kyrie. He might be the fourth, just in a vacuum, fourth of those four players. But stylistically, you can say he's the best fit. But there's the mm-hmm. If you were saying who fits with Joel Embiid, right? We could say, hey, no matter how great, like Anthony Davis could be tough with those two guys both playing. Like Mike with LeBron, any of these guys, you would make it work. Any of these guys, they could complement each other. I do think there are better complements than others.
Can't forget the other side of the court. This is the NBA. You got to play some defense. That's why you mentioned not only the shooting with Klay, not only the younger players, that are, especially with Kuzma. That's a nice big three with Klay.
Bad.
And you're going to get that night in, night out defense that Klay. That's why I don't believe him and Kyrie. Also, from an injury standpoint, man, Kyrie is no workhorse of a basketball player. You can't expect him to play 75 games every season. And from what I'm seeing from LeBron, LeBron ain't putting no effort into that defensive end. That's not going to get any better until you get into crucial games and into the playoffs. That's why I believe that the other players at this stage, we have to be realistic. Who LeBron is and where you think he's going to be in 12 months or in 24 months. He's not going to be a better defender.
Well, Magic has to get a plan B. I mean, obviously, you start with the top. You try to get AD. That doesn't work. Then, you know, obviously, Kevin Durant, you don't think he might not come in. And Kawhi Leonard, you got to start looking at some of those other guys on who you can actually add to this team and make a big difference. You can't get it wrong.
Well, so
but that
and
wasn't the plan. No, the plan was two superstars.
The plan was two superstars. And if they do not, if that doesn't happen this summer, then the plan has gone awry. Because I don't think they will do what you're talking about. If they strike out on all these guys and Anthony Davis gets traded elsewhere, I think what they're going to try to tell you is
what?
Anthony Davis is a free agent in the year. Just hold on and wait. Just we're going to develop these young players, and you're talking about LeBron in year 18.
Yeah.
That will mean this was a – I don't want to say a fail. It was – the plan didn't go according to plan. right? Like, you can't call it a failure until you see how it plays out. But I don't think they would sign, for example, Tobias Harris to remove their ability to get Anthony Davis a year later. But you would be punting on a championship chance in what would have to be one of the last years LeBron has as the best player in the league.
Yeah, that would not be the plan, Jenna.
Yeah. Like,
that would have been a major, major failure. You cannot go through the first 2 years of LeBron James and not be a playoff threat.
Here's my question. The way the Warriors went out and basically got Kevin Durant with the thing and the Hamptons and the whole big shebang, whatever, can't LeBron do that with one? LeBron's the greatest player, arguably, to ever play the game. He can't go out and sort of get one of these guys to want to come buy into the Lakers system and play with him?
So, again, I think it's important that we talk about the specific names because it's not nebulous. We know who they are. So, Kyrie Irving, can he go recruit Kyrie? I think he'll try during the All-Star break, but if Kyrie leaves Boston, I think it is most likely to go play in New York, a place we know
he wants his own
team. Had designs on.
Fine.
If Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors, it is because, first and foremost, he wants to become the greatest player by winning a championship on a team that he built it. That's one of the reasons.
And that won't happen.
And I would say his desire to do things from a business perspective have a pull in New York City on him. So basketball and business.
Just like when LeBron picked the Lakers, business had something to do with it. It's a real good story yesterday. Rich Klein and his business partner, they set up shop in New York City officially. They moved their operations out here. So Kevin Durant, New York City has an allure. Klay Thompson, I don't know why Klay would leave the Warriors to be the only reason to leave the Warriors in my eyes would be, see, you know, what could I be the best player? What is it like if I'm the best player? If he wants to be the second best player, he's in the perfect spot, and he seems as happy
as can be. What does he have to prove standing Golden State? If they win another championship, he could chase and have some fun. Now go see if he can play somewhere else. Go to L.A.
Mm-hmm. Where his dad play
in L.A. Why wouldn't he go do that? I could understand his move more so than Kevin going somewhere. But I like Klay. If he makes a move, he goes into the free agent market, why not go try to play somewhere where you're going to be, actually you're going to be the second best player on the team if you go play with LeBron. So you actually move up where you was at. You move up as far as...
Right, he was second. Now he's third best on the Warriors. I get it. Listen, Kawhi's the catch. Kawhi's the one who we believe wants to leave and wants to go to Los Angeles.
Yes.
There's only two teams there.
Right.
He's competing with Jerry West in cap space. LeBron's big recruiting this summer should be Kawhi Leonard.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.